Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach, developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. I've got a very special guest with me today. Another episode, and my guest today is Simon Millington. Morning, Simon. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good, yes. Thank you for inviting me on.
Brilliant. Now, Simon, thanks for being with me, man. Just a quick one, Simon, before we get into the thick of it. Maybe just give a bit of a brief insight around who you are, what you do, and we can kind of go from there.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. Most recently, I was working for the Football Association as a county coach developer, which is someone who was tasked with delivering level 1, 2 in UEFA B within the county that they were assigned, and mine was Kent, and also the CPD events and then mentoring people through their in-situ support visits. Unfortunately, I was made redundant from that role back in October of last year. And so most recently, I've been doing mental health courses, MHFA England as an independent instructor, and also working for Pearson as their level 3 sporting excellence performance assessors, which is assessing scholars within professional football clubs in relation to that award. So I still keep abreast of coach development, but during the pandemic, it's been difficult to get back out, especially because I moved to Spain during that time. Doing things in Spain has been a little bit different. So I've had to do a lot of my stuff online, which, you know, I think most people have had a lot of CPD and development through this format. But I do miss being back on the grass. That's part of the reason why I'm moving back to England in 2022 to get back involved, you know, out supporting coaches as best I can.
Brilliant. Like, obviously, you know, you talked about some of your experiences working as a coach developer, but obviously the journey started off as a coach. I want to take you right back to the start of that journey. You know, where and when did you fall into the world of coaching?
Well, yeah, I think it was around 1997. So at that time, I was working on building sites. And I thought, I can't do this for the rest of my life. This is not something that really floats my boat. What else do I really, really like? You know, so... the nature of your audience, I don't know what they are, but, you know, from the ages of 16 to 20, I was probably in a little bit of trouble, you know, and trying to get away from being in trouble, went on to building sites to earn money in badge at that time, which was the FA prelim. So I did that with the Navy because I'm from Portsmouth and the Navy was the best place to do it. I didn't pass the first time, you know, so I was determined then, you know, because I didn't take it as serious as I should. You know, and I've seen it myself when coaches come onto courses, people think they can rock up and pass, you know, so it was good for me to get a kick up the backside and have to redo it. So in 1997, I think I passed that. And then I started working for, you know, the local authority running social inclusion sessions in deprived areas of Portsmouth, and then working part time for Portsmouth in the community in school sessions, after school sessions, holiday courses, and within school time as well. So there was a bit of school time stuff there, but it was just ad hoc. So I then had the dream that I wanted to work in the pro game. And so I started to take my other coaching qualifications. At that time, you went from prelim straight onto UEFA B. Again, I did my UEFA B with the Navy in 1998, and passed that first time because I took it much more seriously. And was then I started to look at, well, what else do I need to do? And I was coaching in a variety of formats, pre-academy stuff for Portsmouth, but it was a centre of excellence back then. Working in non-league football at a low level, just doing sessions, so nothing serious, because I also had to earn a living. So at that time, I was working as a night porter in the University of Portsmouth, while then getting up, then going out and doing, you have to prioritise where things lie. And the coaching community in the next player, and he started to really try and professionalise the pre-academy stuff to align with the centre of excellence. So I managed to get on my A licence up at Lillishaw in 2002. And at that time, it was 2 weeks at Lillishaw, intensive. You do a lot of sessions, running around in them constantly, some workshops in the morning, pre-run around, some workshops in the evening. So 10 to 12 hour days, quite hard going, but really good. You know, you start to pick up a lot. And then, you know, I got knocked back for that. And so me and my partner at the time, then we split up and I went traveling. I went backpacking for, you know, about 18 months. So I went to South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Thailand, Fiji, but it was South America where I really wanted to go to. And I went to South America, also playing street football in the corners of Peru. You know, everyone paid the equivalent of a pound, and your team and winner stays on. So that's how they earned money. They just kept, you know, playing football in the evening and then go for a few beers after. And then you play in the Amazon, in the jungle, then on the beaches, and, you know, playing on Copacabana Beach, Ipanema Beach in Rio, then going down to Argentina and playing in Tigre on the pitches there. It was just fantastic to play against different people and see how they, their joy of football, actually, especially the Brazilians, you know, the way they just play football wherever they can at every opportunity. I came back, I reset my A license in between those bits and went up to Keele University, got knocked back again. Even though all my colleagues and people on the course said, oh, you've smashed it this time, it was still, no, unfortunately, you know, you're 90% there, but you haven't quite got it. You know, for me, 90% is a pass. But at that time, it wasn't. So when I came back, I moved from Portsmouth up to London, and I was living in Brixton in a house share. And I started working for Fulham in the community within Brixton. So I started to run their satellite office out there as the football development manager in that office, which then was a really great learning for me to work with lots of people from different cultures. You know, working in Brixton with a variety of different people, especially people from a Caribbean background, was excellent, really, really eye-opening. And the way they see life, the way they love life, their philosophies on football, experiencing the patties, the porridge, you know, just having great experiences with people in that area, and also the challenges they face. You know, unfortunately, some of the young people growing up in their areas have got very much a challenging atmosphere with postcodes and also being groomed into things where you think, oh, what a shame. Well, you know, it's an absolutely crying shame for them that they're getting, you know, taken down a crime route, which is something that no one should be, you know, that's your choices. You do this or other things will happen to you. So it was lovely to work at Fulham. I tried to do my A license reassessment again, but I couldn't, I wasn't allowed to work with the academy because I was a foundation or, you know, a community coach, so I wasn't seen as good enough. So then I went back to my hometown as a sports development officer for the local authority, Portsmouth, where I was working in the youth service, trying to introduce young people into a variety of different sports. And I was doing coaching down there, mainly with the Royal Navy, social recreational sides, not their first team, just to keep my hand in. And just to make sure I was coaching lots and lots and lots. And then part of that work got me a job at the FA within a program called the Football Mashup. So Football Mashup was around getting teenagers who dropped out of the game back into the game. So they wanted people who could communicate well with teenagers, could get onto their level. And that's when we started to use a constraints-based approach to introduce games, because they didn't want coaching. The reason that they'd left football was partly because of coaches being too demanding, didn't understand their needs and wants, and, you know, making them feel worthless. These are the children who actually aren't going to go on to be elite performers. So they just want to play football on their terms. So that's part of what we were doing. It was giving football on their terms, but conditioning the game so they were still learning and developing and getting better at football. And then that role ran out because of funding, you know. So then the next part was actually, then I would have probably gone down the academy route, because at that time, that's when they were starting to grow. But I'm very proud of being more of a recreational grassroots person, because I think the wider the base, you know, where that's where most people work, you can make a real difference to young people's lives. And I think that's what really motivates me. It's trying to make sure their experiences of sport and football are excellent. And it's trying to make coaches aware that they play a pivotal role in that.
Just on that then, you've talked to it in quite a lot of depth around some of your journey there. There's been a lot of different experiences. You seem quite well travelled. So you've probably experienced a lot of different cultures. You're right. You know, you're currently in Spain. Initially with the intention of potentially building out a career out there and winning the game. You talk about going through your A license and even at some point being 90% of the way there.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, you've had time as a county coach developer, so, you know, you're quite familiar with the coach education pathway and how things have maybe changed over the years.
Yeah.
As well as being privy to maybe some of the cultural aspects of other countries and how the game is seen and maybe delivered elsewhere. So, let's start with the coach education pathway. What are your thoughts on the current coach education pathway? And, you know, having gone through that journey yourself in terms of not quite being over the line, having to go through several assessments of the A license, even though you thought you were ready at times, do you feel that there was almost, you're 90% of the way there because it's a cookie cutter approach and you're still not fully cooked over, if that makes sense?
Yeah, there is very much a hierarchy in relation to who passed. Now, I haven't got a playing background. I haven't got lots of friends in places that would be classified as football people. So, my background was a love of coaching. I loved the game and I wanted to be involved in it. You know, I don't know what your experience was as being coached, but when I was a child, I played for a very good team. But the coaching was, you know, nothing to be desired. Drill based, lots of repetition of stuff that didn't really transmit to the football pitch. And also, you know, there was no real equal playing time. Or so if your dad bought the kit, yeah, you were in, even if you weren't the best kid. So you had to navigate some of those politics. So when I look at coaching, I don't believe in that methodology that was used there. You know, copy me, you'll become a good coach. Because how do we know the person in front of you is a good coach? So for me, what the latest, you know, iteration or version of coaching is it's encouraging people to learn how to coach the right way for them, based on their context. Now, it still needs to evolve further. So when I was working within that role, it was influenced by research. So one of the research papers that resonated with me was Cote and Gilbert's Effective and Expert Coaching. So when I looked at that, and actually they talk about four C's, so connection, character, confidence, and then competence. I've also added in the fifth C of caring, you know, because I think it's important that young people, players, need to know that you care about them. Now, Cote and Gilbert would say that sits underneath character. Yeah, so, you know, it's semantics really. But for me, that's how I started to assess people. How well do they connect with their players? Yeah. How well do they then try and build their character, their confidence, and ultimately their competence as a person, but then as a footballer. So this is at level two. So then I would, because assessing people with a coaching framework, a coaching competency framework, was vast. You know, as you said at the start, the spectrum of coaching is, you know, huge. So we would discuss on the courses in Kent, how do you connect with your players? Because if you're running the under sevens or under eights, it would look different to you doing the first team at a non-league side who might be step five. So connection is variable. So when I come out and look at you in situ, we'll discuss, what are you really working on? Well, I'm really trying to build effective connection to build confidence with that player, that player, that player. But ultimately, the team's competence will be where we drive this from. So that's when I started to look at it and say, right, well, that's what we'll look at then. And then your level two sign-off will be linked to you evidencing that you can do that. So it still sits within the framework, but you're trying to give people more of a chance around what their skills and attributes are, rather than going, oh, you need to step in at this time, do a stop, stand still, demo it, and then get them to rehearse it. And then, because, okay, that's a way to coach. Is it the most effective way? Probably not for under eights. So we have to make it contextual. We have to judge people on where they're working. And, you know, that might be specific if someone is working at an elite end and they really want to nail a certain thing that they want to get across. And they're going to go, we're going to paint a really clear picture of what the expectation is. Mm. Would that be right for under eight kids in December and you've only got an hour with them? No. So for me, I think the current courses are edging towards that.
Yeah.
You're getting judged. I think what you do need, though, is if someone's coming off a level two or in the future it'll be a UEFA C, they need a bridging course before they can go into academy football. They need to be able to evidence that they understand enough of the game to then go into that. Because I don't think the X's and O's, the tech-tac bit, is essential for grassroots coaches. If they want to learn it, they can go off and learn it, most definitely. But, you know, if it's about keeping children in the game and making football for all and making sure that they keep coming back, then we don't need to be too heavy on that. We can use conditioned games, constraints, which draw out and allow them to problem solve. But I think when they go into a more elite environment, there needs to be a bridge between grassroots type quals into, you know, more elite environments. That could also be part of a mentoring process rather than a bridging qual, if you understand what I mean by
that. Yeah, definitely. I think you make a great point there. You know, there's always been that conversation ever since the kind of the youth mods came out, really, whether there were some contradictions or there were some misplaced priorities around what was important and what was not important within grassroots football, when whether the pathway was appropriately catering for coaches who wanted to go down the recreational route and those that maybe wanted to go down becoming career coaches down a more professional route. Like, I think I definitely agree that there should be some sort of bridging element, whether that's through mentoring, whether that's through a course in particular. But coming back to the framework now, it's a conversation I've been having with a few people. So I mean, similarly to yourself, I've worked in coach education. I've been delivering courses on behalf of counties for the last few years myself. And it's quite interesting because, yes, there's a framework, and I think the framework allows people to work within it. And, you know, largely the gist of it is really, right, do what you think's best for the players in your environment, provide a rationale for it. And as long as it's justified, then, yeah, we can kind of go with it. We don't necessarily have to agree as coach developer to coach, as long as we can see eye to eye on what that justification is. Now, I think a lot of learners, certainly from my experience, interpret that as, well, I can coach what I want and how I want because it's my environment, if that makes sense. But actually then lose sight of the bit that you've just spoke about there in terms of actually still got to be relevant to the game. You still have to have that tech and the X's and O's piece in there. And no one's saying that it needs to be at this level, but everything should still link back to that. So I'll give you an example. I had a learner recently. has been unfortunately due to the pandemic and in other circumstances has basically gone through maybe three or four different tutors before I've come across him. And he's had consistent feedback that, okay, look, we can see what you're trying to do, but actually still need to be able to demonstrate the tech piece. And it might be the interpretation of that might be actually, can you do maybe step and do some command style, stop stand stills, working with players that are age 13 to kind of 14. And his response to that is, well, it's my environment. My players are not going to enjoy that.
Yeah,
and I think it's that finding the balance of, right, are your players not going to enjoy it? Or is it the other side of that, is the players are not going to enjoy it because maybe you're not delivering it in a way that is enjoyable? Because I don't think stop, stand still is a bad way to coach. I don't think it's the only way to coach, but I definitely think it is required in many environments, especially if they're not just there simply for participation.
Yeah, and without knowing this context and what this lad's background is and where he's trying to go. So is it UEFA B? Is it level two?
It's UEFA B, and that's, I think that's where it becomes even more important.
Because UEFA B, so what we would do, sorry to cut you off, Yaz. So when I was doing level two, what we would say is, this is all, from a practical perspective, we would say, we will treat block one as foundation phase on the ball, understand what technique looks like. You know, so the small details of how to travel with the ball, how to pass the ball, but we might dress it up with condition games. So if I'm looking on a variety of pass types, we might play a game called Bomb the Base, where you put a bib on the floor and you decide the distance that bib is away from you and your mate. And then all you do is you try and clip the ball and get it to land on the bib. Or if you're not good at clipping, pass it and see if you can get it to... So you're just looking at accuracy and weight, but it's dressed up in a game. So if you're doing it with foundation phase, that's it. When you speak to the coaches, you start to say to them, well, look at how he's addressing the ball. What's the contact like? Why is it not going accurate? Is their foot locked? Is it, you know, open? Is it closed? Are they hooking it? So we would start to just delve into them with a little bit more detail around what they're looking for as they're going around watching the practice. You then go into block two, where you start to think, all right, well, we need some sort of building on that. So me and a mate. So we can start to then talk about angles and distance and timing and how to approach, when to approach, body shape. But we would play lots of games, you know, but they would be small versions of the games, 1v1s, 2v2s, 3v3s. So you then start to help people understand this is the game. You have to combine and get the ball into that end zone. But what we're really looking at is actually overlap runs. So if you manage to go out the wide areas and overlap a friend, then you'll get two when you get the ball into that end zone. So those little conditions to try and encourage that topic to come out more. But we then look at coaches and say, look, when you're observing the practice, yeah, don't just write down about, oh, this is how I set it up. Look at the detail. When do I pass? How do I pass? How do I receive? What's the timing of the run? So then we would go on to block three, which would be on, around, away from the ball. So what do I do if I'm on the ball? What does my mate do to support me long? So people would then go on to UEFA B, understanding the very basics of on, around, away. So, yeah, we would then look at coaching practices which had contextual interference. And it might not be full-on pressure, but there'll be bodies in the way and having to deal with that. We would then say to people, try and use a different coaching methodology here to help you understand when to intervene, how to intervene. It could be peer discussions, one-to-one conversations. It could be, you know, stop, stand, stills.
Yeah.
What we would say in block three is we want you to evidence to us that you're confident at stopping it, rehearsing it, demoing it, and having a go. Because we want you to leave the course with as much coaching methodology as you can, yeah. And then you can select and apply what you think's appropriate.
And I think that's a really good way to look at it. I mean, if I just come back to some of the in-situ visits I've done and some of the learners that I've worked with, that if I come back to this same gentleman, even in fact, says, look, I understand what you're trying to do. However, in order to get through this pathway, this qualification, you need to put evidence to me and demonstrate to us that you can, if when needed, coach in these ways. Now, you know, to keep it very simple, here's the coaching spectrum, here's the different types of intervention that you may or may not use. You may have a dominant style, you may have one that's not as dominant. You may have a preferred style that you like to use within your coaching based on the environment you're in. However, you need to be able to demonstrate that you can use each and every one of them if and when needed. And even coming back to the qualifications themselves, I mean, the way I kind of break it down is the level one is the what. The level two is the how. The UEFA B, and then is almost the why, the where, and the when.
Mm-hmm.
And then the A is kind of the why, the where, and the when part two.
Yeah.
In a bit more detail, but it's not why, where, and when. But it's why, where, and when in relation to what the opposite 11 players are doing.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, it's just almost right. You have to be able to demonstrate that you have a good understanding of that. And the simplest way I explain it is that you need to be able to show us that you can coach. You can actually coach the game. And it's not as simple as, right, putting on practice, putting them in some games, throwing some conditions on it, and saying, right, this is what we're doing. I mean, even that old phrase of let the game be the teacher, I don't believe in that. Because at some point, there needs to be a guiding principle. There needs to be a guiding, whether that's from the conditions or the constraints as you put them within the game, whether that's some direction or tasks that have been set by the coach, or even if it's a simple command, right, this is what we're looking at today, and being very direct with that approach. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, and this is where, you know, you get into what is coaching? What is effective and expert coaching? So some people will sit on the spectrum that coaching is me getting in and doing. But I also agree with you, you can't turn around and say, let the game be the teacher, because, you know, for how long? For, you know, but then it's me judging what someone else's ability is as they develop. So were they just about to crack it before I stepped in? I don't know. So when I step in and intervene, it could be a questioning process to go, talk me through this, talk me through that.
Yeah, 100%. I think just on that as well, it's not just were they about to crack it before I stepped in, but it's also understanding that we've all got our own perceptions of what the game looks like. So it's really important that we do understand where they're at. So one of the challenges I often give any coaches that I work with is, right, if you've got some of your, let's just say your key coaching points, your key factors that you're hoping to go through, if you were maybe to use a command style approach, right? Based on that, I want you to now develop maybe 3 to 4 questions that will allow you to extract the understanding from the player in relation to those points that you're going to give.
Yeah.
Start to consider, no one's saying you have to use the questions, you don't have to use them. But I just believe from my own experiences, by getting the coaches to start to think about those questions that they may be able to ask, will allow them to start to see the game from a different perspective. And in addition to that, it's then, like you mentioned, about peer discussion. Right, how would you guide that peer discussion? Or what task could you set within a peer discussion or group collaborative discussion that actually might lead them towards identifying either the technical outcomes or a better understanding of the tactical requirements of that skill or component or whatever that might be? Whereas, like I said, you get set, a lot of learners now who walk away from the courses thinking it's just about putting on the practice. Putting on the practice is great. And if I come back to the same learner again, I know that he goes, I've been working with these players for 4 years and they've definitely developed over time. And I said, well, there's no doubt they've probably developed over time. The question is, have they developed as much as they could have in that period? Now, we will never know the answer to that question, but what we can do is reflect and say, right, what have we done and what are the things that we could have done that we can be quite certain of probably would have given them more opportunities to develop, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing with me, and I've been more and more drawn to this, is do people understand what my interpretation of what I'm saying is to them? And it's the same with players. So if we talk about, you know, there's a great guy called Mark Bennett who does some really good work around athlete-centered coaching, player-centered coaching, and looking at a behaviors-first approach. So if I'm talking about, well, actually, I want you to be committed to your learning and development. What does that mean for Yas? What does it mean for Simon? What does it mean for Terry? What does it mean for Mohammed? We can look at that and go, right, do they understand what I mean by it? Have we structured it so it's appropriate for their age and stage of development? And then are we starting to build on it? Because as a player, I know I've gone to sessions and my mind is closed off. I'm not really in a learning mode that day. If the coach is then trying to help me learn something and it's doing, and I'm just going, oh man, you know, I just want to run around for a bit. I just want to play. I just want to, have they understood that in me as a person at that time? So have they connected with me to understand, not today. Yeah, just let me play, focus your attention and time on other people for today. You've then got to try and work out, well, what actually do my young people want from me in the context that we're in? Enough coaches don't spend time understanding that. What is this group all about? What are we trying to achieve?
Yeah.
Now, if I go in and start coaching in a way that's going to be counterproductive to pass a qual, I have to understand that. That's why, for me, evidence it on the course. So we used to say to people, you must deliver, and you must deliver the opposite of a session. So if it's an in possession, you will do an in possession and an out of possession where you show us a full range of methodologies. Yeah, because we want to see. Now, how they structure that, it could be group discussion, 1v1s, but then there will be a time where we will expect them to go in and go, excuse me, I just want to really highlight this point because it's key. And I'm going to use the stop, stand still methodology because I think it's most appropriate for this time. And we want them to recognize, well, actually that is. And I would encourage people, set the behaviors first. What do I want us to achieve? What are we working on? What are the learning objectives? This is what we're working on. Questioning, do you understand what we're working on? Because we've outlined it, you fed back to me.
Yeah.
Then 1v1, then mentor. And it could be, if they still haven't got it after all that,
yeah,
I'm going to show you now, and it's going to be this, and this is what I expect from you.
Yeah. I think for me, just on that one though, this is just my own personal thing. I think this is definitely something I would encourage all coaches to do. If you're ever finding yourself in a situation where you're having to explain something, my thing is just show it anyway. Because what happens more often than not is a lot of players, or a lot of coaches, rather, will explain it, then ask the age-old question, do you understand? Players will say yes because they want to carry on playing. And some of them still don't understand. So, I mean, my approach that I tend to encourage is, right, if you're going to have to explain something, just demo it whilst you explain it. Maybe it might be slow walk-paced demo or half-paced demo, but actually walk through it while you're explaining it and then leave the question, not do you understand?
So when I finally got signed off for my A license, I was working with Dover under 18s, you know, and what we would do is send the clips of, this is what we are trying to work on this week. So I would take a clip from, you know, an elite environment. Okay, so we're Kent Youth League, we're working here, we're not elite performers, but this is what we're working to do. So say it's the way De Bruyne puts balls into the far post. Who's going to be affected by this? And I would outline to them, have a look at this, understand that X, Y, Z are going to be the focus, and look at what we're going to be trying to achieve. Do they watch? Do they not? Some do, some don't. So it's the same when you go in and you demo. So a walkthrough is useful, but it's also slow. It's also unrepresentative.
What I tend to do though within that, and there's two parts to this, is once I've done that, I'll never ask the question, do you understand? What a lot of,
because they always say yes.
Right. How many of you are confident enough to explain back to me what I'm expecting here?
Well, this is where Mark Bennett comes back in, yes, because he goes, show me you understand.
Precisely. So, I mean, I've had on the podcast a couple of times and we've had in-depth conversations about this. And another piece to that is often, for me, is where coaches can maybe have more of an impact and be more effective. What they're doing is understanding which players in the group are learners through observation, which are learners through doing, and which are learners through listening. Because what you might find is, and what typically happens is, right, Simon's got fantastic technique. So whenever I've got a demo I need to show, I'm going to get Simon to do it. Yeah, but Simon might be the guy that needs to see it first. So you might just have someone in the group that might only be 5 or 6 out of 10 out of delivering the technique, but they understand what's expected just from you explaining it. But we know that once Simon understands it, he'll be able to perform it and maybe demonstrate it at a higher level. So let's be mindful of the players that we've got in our group. Who learns by doing? Who learns by listening? Who learns by seeing? Let's keep the players who learn by seeing out of any demonstrations. Get the players who learn by doing or learn by listening, potentially doing the demonstrations, handpick them. They might not be the best technically, but they might actually get you halfway there a lot quicker than if you get Simon to try and work it as well as he's trying to understand, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And learning preference, you know, because I know that learning styles have been debunked, but learning preference in how I like to receive information. But if I say Simon is one of the best players, yeah, some of the kids can go, but I can't do what Simon does. And it's like, all right, well, try to have an attempt at, strive to, whatever the language is where you're trying to encourage them. Don't understand the execution of.
Precisely. And I think this thing comes back to that technical information piece. And I think the common misunderstanding in my experience with a lot of coaches is we coach when something isn't going right.
Yeah.
Actually, we need to start coaching more often when things are going right. So the players are understanding that things are going right, but they're also understanding what it's taking to make those things go right in the first place. So quite often it might be, right, stop, stand still. It might be a bit of praise, and it might be well done, or I love that. But let's be more specific, right? Simon, I love the way you dropped your shoulder there. And because you dropped it at this specific moment, it had the defender doing this, which allows you to now do this. Now, that's still, for me, a demonstration of technical information and knowledge.
Yeah. I mean, what we used to try and do, and I don't know if you've come across it yet, is Coach's Eye. And Coach's Eye is just a £3 app on the iPhone or iPad. And you'd capture some footage. And then you'd WhatsApp it out, or you'd say, look at these examples of what you players have done in this session related to what we were working on. Best examples. But then you would say, also, see if you can have a look to see if there's any examples in there where we could have done better. The challenge for me, especially with recreational players, is, and I imagine it's still in elite environments. So when I do these SEP assessments, I can see the difference between an absolute flyer and someone who's just doing it. Yeah. So when they start to, you say, because you're trying to educate and you're trying to help them learn and understand, some of them just aren't motivated to do it. They don't want to apply the effort required for them to learn and become better. They just want to coast and mess about with their mates. And it's a social thing for them. So it comes back to, once we know our players' motivations for being there, structuring it, because we will know that there'll be session disruptors. We go, oh my goodness, you know, why is this kid even come? They don't enjoy it. I'm trying my best. I'm putting on sessions that I think will really stretch and challenge them and help them become high level for our level. But this child's just not interested in that. And I think all of this comes down to coaches need to be educated to understand what their role is in their context and their team. And going back to the mashup stuff, you see this branch at 12, 11, where I want to take it serious. I still want to just mess about. You've then got the quandary of, you may have 50% of your kids who want to go one way, one go the other. You can't formulate a team that way. You have to go, right, if you want to be recreational, if you've got B sides in your club, maybe the B team is the one where you go, and we need to have trials to get in other kids who are more serious. But then you're streaming and then you've got that. Now, I've no problem with streaming if everyone understands this is what we do here. You're buying into this streaming, and unfortunately, that may include, you might not get equal playing time at times, but that's what you're buying into. You know, this isn't recreational football now. This is serious, and we're really trying our best to push you on. And I think this is where coaches need to invest more time initially, understand your players' motivations. That's that connection bit around why are you here? What do you want? How can I help you? And I remember listening to a podcast of a guy who was working at Watford, and I think he went to China. Brilliant guy. He would say to the players, how can I add value to your game? And I'd be like, that's a great bit of terminology for each player to understand, where do you want to actually get to with this? Because that's the crux of it. And this is the challenge we face as coach educators, assessors, going into grassroots context. It's so broad that we're trying to get, and my terminology is, we're trying to get the glass slipper to fit on the ugly sister. You know, we're not really meeting the needs of the people. We're trying to say, for this context, I need to see. But that's why I say they must show it on course, which we know is fallible as well, because you've got a load of middle-aged people predominantly. There are some younger ones who, but try to get the younger players to run around as much as they should. Oh, no, I've got a game tomorrow. I've got to save this stuff.
Really?
You start to go, they need to evidence it on here that they can. Show me that full spectrum.
Yeah.
And then we will discuss when we're in situ and mentoring, why didn't you do it at that time? Did you not think that that was an absolutely perfect time for you to use X, Y, Z? And then we get into that debate. I think the challenge we have, yes, is effective coach development cannot happen through episodic coaching courses. I really believe that someone like you, like me, should be working in an environment with these people long term. And we set up communities of practice. We support them with understanding what coaching is, the full spectrum of it. We discuss it. We evolve. But you need people who are happy to do that. Because we all know that there's, I don't know where you're based, Jess. Where are you based?
So I'm based in London, Middlesex mainly, to be honest. But
there's big clubs in Middlesex, isn't there?
Yeah.
Massive clubs.
Yeah.
So you need a coach developer who's going into a club, and on Mondays, you're going to be in Hamwell Town, let's say. And every Monday, you're going to evolve their coaching practice. And you're going to go through the whole spectrum of everything over a season, two seasons, three seasons. Because you're getting paid a good wage to work in that environment to really improve coaching. And then Tuesday, you might be in another club in Middlesex. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday is days for you to plan, prep, and really get your knowledge up to where you need it to be. Same for me, if I was working in Dover, Ramsgate, so-and-so. I think that's the only way we can really push this on. Because episodic, come on. Because I know when I've spoken to people, when we've done courses, what have you taken from today? You know, what are you going to go and apply? It's so hit and miss with how it's landed at people. You know, it's frustrating because you think, I really feel that I've catered for the people in front of me. And I really try my best with that. So I don't know if you've done the Open University free coach developer course that they put together, which is about 24 hours.
No, I haven't.
It's got some great stuff on there, you know. And it's free, and you can do it at your own time. So you can do an hour today, 2 hours tomorrow, whatever. And then Stuart Armstrong mentions on there Noel's six principles of why do adults come onto coaching courses.
Mm.
And that really started to shape for me what is it that the person, why are they motivated? What's the immediate problem that they want solving?
And I think that's a really important question, or really important thing to know, because I think for a lot of these, and this is one of the other challenges. I think, by the way, the idea of being able to go out working in clubs and supporting their coaches on site and having almost dedicated time and available to each environment that you go into, I think is a fantastic idea. I think the only challenge you have with that sometimes as well is that, coming back to the piece that you've just mentioned there, is what is the motivation of the coach? Now, the reality is not every coach is that bothered about their development.
Yeah.
Especially not from a formal qualification standpoint. I mean, I know I was just having a conversation with one of my mates yesterday, and, you know, there's a local, you know, semi-pro team that he's working with. He's working with the under-18s, and he's got an A license. The first team manager ain't even got a level one. So the other side of it is, how much do they really care about the qualification? How much do they really care about whether they actually develop or not? Then, you know, you do get some, and they're few and far between. They're definitely not the majority in my experience that actually genuinely want to develop, yeah, genuinely want to get feedback and support around their own practice, how they can maybe go further with what they're doing and maybe implement new ideas and be a bit more creative and innovative with that. So I think there is that balance of, you might have a great environment, but even the people within it, they have to have their own ambitions. But I think it comes back to that question that, you know, you talked about earlier, the same question you'd ask the players, as well as you being a coach developer and even in a coaching capacity, is how can I help you? How can I add value to you? Whereas previously, my mindset was almost, well, I'm the coach, I've got some knowledge to share, here you go, have it. But I think also that asking that question, how can I add value, comes back to the 5 C's that you talked about, and that 5th C in particular, the caring piece. That caring piece, because, you know, it's about developing that rapport, developing that relationship, and, you know, that age-old phrase, how does it go? People don't care what you say until they know how much you care.
Because the norm 6 principles for adults is they usually come on to some sort of education. So some people, if you put a strap line on this, if it resonates with them, they're going to listen and they're going to go, ah, that's talking about a subject that I need help with now.
Yeah.
So when they come on, I want some behavior management techniques. Ah, okay. Well, this is where we can discuss how you structure it, what consequences you might have in place, how you praise, how you practice, how you design practice. All those elements that will manage behavior better will come in there. And all those bits that we know about, well, if you have line drills, they're going to flick each other's ears and be annoying. Try not to have line drills. Keep them busy, active. Wear them out a bit. When they get a bit blowy, let them rest. They're not going to want to scrap with each other. So this is where I think, I don't know if you've come across it before, this work by Wenger Trainer around communities of practice. And they use it a lot in Canada, but it's used to be initially working in offices. But the different values, so they have a thing called the value creation framework. So the value creation framework is the different strategic things people come on courses to get. So it could be, I just want immediate value. Well, what's immediate value? Behavior management techniques is what I want. What's potential value? Becoming better at practice design to help me manage behavior better. Okay, brilliant. Then it turns into applied value. So when I've applied it, reviewed it, what have I got from it? Did that stuff that Yas gave me work? Mm. It did. Now I'm buying into Yas because he's helped me solve an immediate problem that I was really struggling with. You then look at the realized value. Actually, working with Yas over a long period of time helps me be better at what I do, helps my players have a greater experience. Mm. And then we reframe it by going, well, what next? I've got good at behavior management. Is it tech for me now that the players are tuned in, listening, and ready to receive information from me? And I think it's a nice way, because when you go into a club, you can start to go, right, if we have me as the mentor at the top, we then have a collective of people, which might be people who are interested in learning lots more, motivated, and they also want to develop the other coaches as they come in as beginners. Brilliant. We can empower them, share with them, they then go off and do the same to the next cohort of people below us. Mm-hmm. So we just work with those really motivated ones who want to learn and give them what we know, and then they pass it on. So this is almost a tumble-down effect. And
it's like the five
levels. Sorry, say that again, yes, I missed it, mate, sorry.
So it's like the 5 levels of leadership stuff.
Right. Yeah, go on. Elaborate on that, because I don't know that.
Yeah, so basically you've got Do you know what? I don't remember all the levels off the top of my head, yeah. But I'll give you the gist of it. So the first one is about, you know, being in, just because you're a coach or you're in this leadership position, people are going to listen to you.
Yeah, yeah.
But they'll listen, or they'll have more respect and value for you if they can understand that you're there for them.
Yeah.
But the problem obviously that comes with that second level is that if you're there to kind of maybe serve them, if you like, is some people might try and take advantage of that.
Yeah.
But then the next piece is, look, so I'm going to lead. I'm going to lead and help you with what you want. I'm going to lead. I'm going to show you, but then I'm going to also allow you to now show me what you've learned. And the next piece after that is, right, I'm going to lead, you're going to show, but you're now going to teach that to someone else.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that bit's key, because it's not, and they say, you know, if by teaching someone else something, you get to learn it twice over.
Yeah.
Because you have to be quite clear and quite sure of yourself in terms of the information that you're now passing across. So I think that in itself, you know, is something that I like to use within my coaching as well with my players, is that if I can recognize that someone has a good understanding of something, my challenge often to them is, right, I want you to now go and explain that to the rest of the group and break it down in a way that they're going to understand it. And even if they're not able to complete that task, that's okay. It's just now, again, that's a task that I've given them, so that maybe help them understand, right, okay, how can I break this down? Because my thing has always been this, is if you understand how to break it down, the execution piece eventually will come.
Yeah, and that's the process that you're following. That's where you're going. I believe that this process is key. We will get the success that we want from it if we're consistent in the application. And I'm a big believer in that. And I think co-creation with players is what we need to do. We need to go, where are we not functioning as well as we like? Well, it could be we don't press as high as early as we could. Okay, what do we need to design to help us get better at that? Oh, this. Let's go and have a go then. And then we'll refine it and, you know, deal with it as we go through. But to get to that stage of coaching, you need to have quite a good knowledge of learning and development. You need to have lots of confidence about how to structure and manage that. And you also need to know, this is not going where it needs to go. I need to bring it back to where we'd like to. And that's what takes time. And this is the thing. People want a shortcut time on the grass, learning and developing, because they think, well, what I need to do is I just need to hear it, practice it, and I'll be... No, we all know that it doesn't happen like that, because people are involved and people ruin things in relation to, I had this lovely plan and now it's gone out the window because these people have come in with different agendas today, you know, and especially in inner London, you know, if a child has had a traumatic experience on the way to training, or, you know, something's happened which has really thrown them out, a friend's got into a scrap or something even more extreme, they turn up at training going, this is my place where, you know, it's just great. It's just great. I'm not with it today because this has happened in my life, but I don't want to share it with anyone. If we then go in and we have an expectation of them around that, you know, people don't always fulfill that expectation. And that's why that caring bit that we touched on around the five C's is important.
Yeah. So,
for me, when we start to assess coaches, I don't know if you've come across the work of Mark Upton. He was an Australian guy, used to live in England, but has gone back to Adelaide. He's got this thing called Wayfinder and Storykeeper. And it links to some work that an Australian academy does down there, where their coaches are called mentors. Yeah, they don't call them coaches. And what they do is they have a platform where, if me and you are working together and you're my coach and I'm your player, and you're saying, Simon, we really need to develop your first touch to get it out of your feet and switch the play.
Yeah.
That's what I want you to work on for the next 6 weeks from a technical, tactical perspective. We will have narrative around this. Simon, here's the video clip of me showing you what I don't think you're doing at the moment. Here's the video of that happening, and that's put on your platform so you know it. So if you know the PMA system, it will link to that. The PMA is a bit, you know, you've also got Huddle for video clips, but it's not. this is where we could have this conversation now. We clip it, it goes on there. Someone, what your IDP, And then that sticks with us, and a narrative comes across that. I will go on in the game today. I had three opportunities to do it. I did it once. It wasn't great. I put that on there. So if I red dot something, it's something for the coach to go and have a look at and go, ah, okay, this is what their thoughts and feelings and observations are around this. Brilliant. Let me respond to that and let's see if we can move it forward. It also tells me what they want me as a coach to do when we're next together.
Mm.
That then becomes their narrative of the season and we start to evolve it. And it goes back to that immediate value, potential value, applied value. And we get to the reframing where we go, what's next? What's next? What's next? And that is what we could use with coaches, I believe. You know, we could start to go, where you at? What do you want? How can I help? What's our interactions that we've measured? So say you then get a new job, you move on, that narrative is still there. Mm. So if I take your place and come in, I can go, well, let's see where this person is.
Provided you have the same approach and that you approach it in a way of also, how can I add value?
Yeah, yeah. Because that's my job. That's how I see it.
And you know, the individuals though, isn't it? And I think that's a key piece. It's not just adding value based on the needs, but it's needs and wants. Because they have to buy into that process. And I think that's the real key piece here. If they're not buying into it, you could have all, again, you can have all the knowledge in the world. You can have all the, you know, the best practices that might get this topic to come out or this individual piece to come out. But if they're not buying into it, you're chasing a lost cause.
But I think when they understand that to pass your qualification, you have to show X, Y, Z. It could be when you go in situ, it just doesn't come out.
Yeah.
But I've got access to their video footage. Their, you know, say I've got a coach who's an assistant coach. They can then give a narrative around it, but support it with actual evidence. It can't just be my mate writing a nice thing about me. And then they go, right, okay, here is the video footage of Yas executing consistently some stop, stand still, let's say, which has been a challenge for them because it doesn't feel natural for them, but they've embraced that challenge and gone, I'm determined to show Yas that I can do what they expect. Mm-hmm. Because we know we go to watch in situs and it might not happen for whatever. It could go because that kid's turned up, he's been traumatized. That's then rippled out to the rest of the group. And the rest of the group have just gone, oh, Simon's had this mad thing on the way into session today. And it's just, you know, and the coach looks at you and goes, yes, I don't know what to do. You've gone out there, you've invested your time, but you know, well, what success are we going to get to that? It's probably going to be minimal in relation to the conversation we had pre-in situ because this is just done. So it's taking the pressure off, in my opinion, that episode becoming the thing. It's more a let's show your development journey from the day you entered on level two, UA4C, to where you think you're ready to be signed off.
Yeah.
You know, and we're abreast of that because if you've got 12 people you're supporting, you know exactly where they are in that process and you go, I'm going to go out. I'm confident I can sign this person off because they've shown me evidence.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just that process becomes their norm. Mm. If you want to pass, this is what you need to do.
I think that would be very ideal. But I think a lot of the challenges that a lot of learners do have is if for one reason or another, there's no consistency in the person that's overseeing that process for them.
There you go.
Is evidenced. You might see something, and I might see anything. Well, actually, that doesn't quite meet the barrier for me or the bar for me in terms of that competency or that piece of the framework, if you like. So I think, and
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The other side of it is really making sure that the learners in this case do understand a somewhat correct interpretation of what the framework actually is demanding of them. Now, it is a framework, which means it's yours to work within. And even with that, you'll have your interpretation as a coach developer. I might have my own, but there is a general
consensus.
That this is what we're looking for.
I'm not sure
whether a lot of learners actually pick up on that. But I just want to kind of move things on a little bit. Come back to your own journey a little bit more. In terms of your own journey now, then, what would you say has been the biggest lesson that you've picked up along the way?
In relation to what, yes? Anything?
Just in relation to, more specifically, I guess, what makes you an impactful coach? So going into that environment, obviously you've talked about maybe the asking that initial question of, right, how can I add value? And I think it's a brilliant question. If the people that you're asking the questions to have some sort of awareness or an understanding of maybe what value could be brought, regardless of who's asking the question. So they have to have some sort of self-awareness or awareness of the context to even be able to ask a question like that.
Yeah, I think the thing for me is, the biggest realization is effective development takes time. So I was coaching my sons under 18, and we were starting to look at, well, what are the behaviors I want from them first, using Mark Bennett's approach around, well, initially, I want them, when they come to training, to try their best. So we would have commitment, and then what do the five commitment statements mean to me? So then, as they went through the season and they started to consistently apply that, I would then go, you've gone from a 2 out of 5 to a 5 out of 5 for that topic area. So what we would look at was commitment, being a positive teammate, and then also being responsible. Because I believe that once people are committed, take responsibility, and then a positive, because I want people to be positive around our performance. We know we're going to be up and down with actual outcome, but we want to be positive around it. We're not going to dig our mates out. You know, I don't think anyone really functions when someone gives them a lot of grief. I've met people who've said, oh no, I need someone to actually shout and scream at me to get, well, okay, that's fine. If that works for you, you need someone who's going to do that. That won't be me. I then need to teach them that. So I'm looking at it. This is what we're going to work on. Positive teammate, behavior, commitment, responsibility. Technical stuff will sit around that. Now, because they're under 8, what do we need to do attacking? What do we need to do defensive? Rotation of positions, equal playing time. That is then layered on year, with new behaviours introduced, new levels of tech, new levels of dealing with format. Now, after 2 years, we moved to Spain, so I haven't managed to go through that over a 10-year period. I think I need a 10-year period to go, what does it make me to be effective? Well, I need to have 10 years to look back and go, you know what? That nailed it. Because this is a hypothesis, this is a theory.
Yeah.
I think if I apply this, and this, I will help people come out much more educated about football and how to play the game. Now, whether they're recreational, and go on to play for a pub team, they still know how to play the game. When to support, how to receive, whether they can execute it to a high level, well, that's down to their physical capabilities, their technique, their application.
I 100% agree with that. And I think you make a great point there. And the reality is probably going to be very difficult and challenging for you to kind of, really assess the effectiveness of that without maybe having consistent groups of people working with you as well on that.
Yeah.
However, there will be some things which you can see are working. Now, I guess my only key message leading off from that for maybe coaches to kind of take on board, and this will probably going to be many coaches listening to this that this won't apply to, but there probably will be a lot out there that it will apply to, is that if you're a coach that's looking at other people's sessions, looking at other people's practice and thinking, right, I really like that, I'm going to do that now. Don't let that be the end of your curiosity, if you like. Don't curb it there. Go one step further and identify for yourself why, or better, what the origins of that approach, that practice or that conversation has been from that coach to that player, from that coach to those players, from that coach developer to the coach, so that you can really understand that if A, it's working, why it's working and what the reasons were that it's working, what it was designed for. But B, also on the same note, if it's not working, understanding what it's designed for and having the understanding of what it was, what the design is and what it was designed for, you'll also be able to easier pinpoint why it may not be working in that environment. So I often, I'll refer to them as maybe YouTube coaches in this case, is they'll watch a session, they'll go and see someone's session, they'll deliver the same practice, and they'll even try and coach the points to the same timings as what they've seen. But paying no attention to the context of actually what actually happened in that moment.
Yeah.
What was the detail and what was the need for that detail in that moment? What was the practice and what made the players make a particular decision? Was it the constraint of the practice? Was it where the opposition were placed? Was it the fact that actually they had a certain task or challenge within the practice which encouraged them to make a certain decision?
Yeah.
The possibilities are endless on that. But I guess the real key message is really get an understanding and ask yourself, why has this been designed and who has it been designed for? Before then taking the concept and applying it for you in a similar way for your own players, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because yes, the biggest challenge for me, even with my knowledge and experience, was conveying the message to the parents effectively around my approach.
Yeah.
So I was very much around they're developing. They're going to develop at different ages and stages. We've got first quarter births. We've got fourth quarter births. We understand that they're going to be different places cognitively and physically.
Yeah.
You'll see certain people execute certain things. Don't judge your child by another child's performance. Have an Ipsactive approach to assessment where you judge them on their previous best. But because parents weren't able to understand this, and this is where I failed in relation to, I needed to educate them more around my approach, for them to be, supportive of it with their child. Because there was parents getting in their car going, what you need to do is this, what you need to do is that. Don't listen to the coach. And there's one game where, we were going to move anyway, but it came to a stage of the season where we were playing a team that played up a year last year and were excellent, really, really good. Dropped back down to their own division. They've been smashing everyone 15-0. They beat us 6. And I spoke to a dad as I'm walking off. What do you think? I'm absolutely devastated. I can't believe that we've lost to them. And that was more personal ego, knowing the coach on the other team, knowing some of the players, and getting drawn into that emotional bit rather than looking at, did your child perform well? Of course they did. We didn't get smashed 15-0 like most teams. And also, we conceded 4 of them goals when we were playing up the hill.
Yeah.
You just think parents can undo all that great work that you're trying to do in your training session with their perspective of what football coaching is. And if you don't invest the time and effort in making sure they're as much on board as possible, because they're still going to have their view, but understand, I'm doing this for the betterment of your child. Please trust the process. Question me. Have conversations with me. I will always explain, because I was sharing videos, articles. This is why I do what I do. Pre-season meetings, mid-season meetings, all that sort of stuff to keep them in the loop. But once you start losing a couple of matches, all of a sudden they start to question the process.
Yeah.
And you go, you have to be more patient than that. So yeah. If I'm talking purely from a grassroots perspective, where I would say most of my knowledge and experience sits, coaches need to invest that time.
Yeah.
And then understand what the motivations of the parents are. Do they align with yours? Because where we were in East Kent, it's a good place in East Kent, but they're so far away from elite academies that, you know, are they really going to get the other coaching that will help them? So the parents' perspective is, my kid's brilliant, absolute shining star. We'll go and play some children from London in this sort of, and they could be in a pre-academy in London who could do these amazing things. And you go, do you understand the levels? Do you understand where your child is developmentally at this moment? If you don't, you're probably doing your child a disservice by putting them on a pedestal where they're not there just yet. If you want them to be, well, you have to do an hour and a half to 2 hour round trip three or four times a week. And then you can start to gauge, where's my son developmentally in relation to these others? And we all know less than 1% make it out the other end to go on to play elite level first team football. And they put too much expectation and pressure on their child to get to that stage.
Yeah. I think to make a great point there, I think one key thing to kind of really look into and take away from that is, and this is something that I'm massive on, is I do believe that coaches need to do more in terms of supporting themselves by educating the parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that could be as simple as, right, in Simon Millington's football club, here's what we mean when we say this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
A means this, B means this, C means this. Now, parents, you might have your own interpretations for what these things mean elsewhere, but when we're in this environment, this is what we mean. So if we are going to support the players by giving them a bit of encouragement and praise from the sidelines, let's try and link it to this. Also, parents, yeah. When I, the coach, am saying A, B, or C, this is what I mean. And I'm not only letting the players know this, but I'm letting you know this, that you could potentially pass those same messages on. And why I say this is because I've, to this day, I've been coaching for, you know, over 10 years, still a long way away from your experiences, but I've never yet met, and you can tell me from your own experiences too, I've never yet met a parent that's been ill-intended. No. Often misunderstood, miseducated, or under-advised. And all it needs is a bit, you know, and this is, it's kind of gone round circle a bit, because they've actually got the motivation. They want to support, but they're only going to support in the way that they know how.
Yeah.
And I think it's for us as coaches to take responsibility of that and give them a bit of guidance on how to support them best. Even if it is as simple as those post-training session conversations, those post-match conversations, around what have you learned? What have you picked up? What was something that you were really proud of today? What was one thing that you saw on the opposition team that you think might benefit you going forward?
Yeah. I mean, one of the best people I've met with this, and you might know him, yes, is Ray Lee. Ray Lee is a coach down in East London. The structure and the setup of his,
high level one.
The structure and the setup of his club is fantastic. And the players that he supports and develops have a really good understanding of what Ray means when Ray's saying this, and the structure of his games, his practices. He really embraces letting them solve the problems, letting them work it out, letting them negotiate, and I'll add value where I can add value. And this is the thing for me is coaches need to understand he's been doing that for a long time. He's very, very good at doing that. And coaches need, not coaches, parents need to understand, what am I signing my child up for? And this is where clubs do a disservice to their coaches who they ask to volunteer. They don't induct people properly into, when you come here, this is what we do. Exactly what you've elaborated there. This is how we do it at this stage, this stage, this stage, this stage. How you can contribute positively is this. You know, because the amount of debates I have with parents about direct instruction from the sidelines, do this, shoot, run, trap, you know, the whole joystick coaching. And I'd say, you don't go into their school and say that. And the discussions around equal playing time, and I say, well, if they went to school and just learned mathematics, would you be happy with it? You know, you wouldn't. You'd want them to get a rich diet of lots of different things. So when they play in goal, yes, it's nerve-wracking. Yes, they'll make mistakes. But that's learning. They're starting to be a bit anxious, but learn to manage the anxiety and go, I can do it. I can be successful. Because there was this one guy, my son's a goalkeeper, because he thinks, well, goalkeepers always play. Well, in this team, your goalkeeper will also play defence, midfield. His son ended up scoring 15 goals. And you look at his little face when he scores a goal, he's over the moon. Is he going to get to do that when he's just the goalkeeper? The dads then said, no, actually, I think he's a defensive midfielder now. And it is that constant, don't label him yet. Don't pigeonhole him. Allow him to see where he flourishes.
Let him play and figure itself out.
Yeah, yeah. Because he'd always look at his dad. It'd always be, I want to please my dad. I want to please my dad. And it's like, dad, can't you look back at him and go, you're pleasing me, rather than going, oh, you did that wrong. Why did you do that? But he made a poor decision at that time. But remember, he's eight. He's not got this memory bank of when I've applied this last time, this has happened. And da, da, da. He hasn't built up that knowledge and experience bank to make more effective decisions more consistently. So you go, let's just help parents. And that's where I should have helped my assistant facilitate these practices initially. I'll have spend 15, 20 minutes with the parents, and then I'll go in and maybe add a bit more value to the session as we go forward. And it's almost, how do we work as a coaching team if we have got a pair? How do we structure it? Because that was my Achilles heel. And if I go back in and do it again in another similar context, I would invest more time in educating those people and having those conversations with them, because you will always have someone who gaslights along the sideline going, oh, so-and-so doesn't do it like this, and oh, we could go up the road and play for so-and-so. And it's like, you could, but you're trading off. You're trading off getting knowledge and experience with someone to get someone who will give you quick wins, quick fixes.
But where
do those children end up? Yeah. Because I've been at the other end working with teenagers who dropped out of the game because their coaching experience was not what it was, they wanted it to be. And they now go, I'd rather step away and not play. Or if I'm going to play, it will just be jumpers for goalposts with my mates over the park. When actually they may have been able to play a level which was more rewarding for them, but they were like, I can't be bothered. You know, I've had enough of football. And you go in, but you're only 13. Yeah, but this coach did that and did it. And my parents were a nightmare and did it. And you think, yeah, it's a shame. And that's why I'm really massive on, let's help coaches understand the impact of their behaviours on young people. You know, I do a lot of mental health courses now. And you see that formative year trauma is what makes a lot of people get to a situation where they take their own life. And you think, well, surely as grassroots coaches and parents, our job is just to nurture and just go, look, let's have a wonderful time during these formative years. Life is going to be hard enough as it is when you get older. Let's really make sure that everything we do in the context where we are is positive and supportive, rather than, you know, like you said earlier, Yas, highlighting the mistakes. Do we need to highlight the mistakes in front of all our peers? You know, it doesn't go down well with me. I wouldn't like being in a place and then suddenly someone says, "Stop, oi, what are you doing?" I'd be like, "Oh God, sorry." But we sometimes forget the impact of that, because we have our own thoughts and feelings around, I need to do this. I need to do this now. And I think just encouraging coaches to be more considered in their why. You know, why do I do what I do in this place? What's my role? How do I support? Do I know enough about my players? Do I know enough about my parents? Do I know enough about the game? And then how do I teach all this to this mishmash of people who've got a load of different thoughts and feelings on this topic area? Because it's quite emotive, football, isn't it? You know, and I used to love delivering courses in London because you had such a rich array of cultures and backgrounds. Oh, I'm Portuguese, I'm Spanish, I'm from the Caribbean, I'm from Africa. Yeah, I'm someone who was born and raised in London my whole life from a white background. Okay, interesting. Let's see what the discussions are around all this. And, you know, you get to a stage where we're all human, we're all very much similar, but those little cultural nuances do make a difference. And I think people just need to be aware of that when they coach. Do they understand enough of the cultural background as well of the people in front of them? You know, what's their motivations for attending football? Where do they want to get to with it? And I think we don't spend enough time just understanding that, because our coaching courses traditionally, yes, were structured to learn how to do the X's and O's before knowing the people.
Yeah,
I think if we flip it, know the people, teach the X's and O's.
I think that's where the youth mods have come in, and I've really changed the perspective on things there. But Simon, look, it's been a really insightful conversation. I'm sure there's going to be lots of things that people have picked up on, and I know there's certainly things that you've got me thinking about. But if we just kind of maybe looked around up and, you know, there was one key message or golden nugget that you'd wanted to share with the listeners and viewers, what would that be?
The one key nugget is be clear on why you do what you do, and how you will add value to the people you're trying to help develop, and do that to the best of your ability. And I think you touched on it. Some people aren't motivated to learn, you know, and for me, that's a red flag from any organization to go, why? You know, and I know some people are a bit pushed forward to become the coach of the team, and they're a bit, I don't know, but I'm the only one who's doing it. Have high support for those people while they go through the beginning stages, because it's not easy. You know, I've just outlined the challenges I had with parents, and I've got 20 odd years of experience. Someone's a beginner, they're not confident, they're trying to challenge this group of people to understand why they do what they do. They probably don't even know yet. So give them effective inductions to really support them. And I think it goes back, let's have experts like yourself, like other coach developers in clubs, and really mentoring properly to make sure that the messages are embedded over a long time, and they can see the successes and share the successes with everyone involved.
Definitely. I totally agree with that. I think it is, I guess the key thing I've taken away from that is about longevity, not necessarily worrying about the quick wins. The quick wins are great when they're there, but let's just think about the long term and how we can get there. Simon, just want to say thank you again for your time today. Look, it's really, like I said, it's really insightful. But if there was any listeners or viewers that maybe wanted to touch base with yourself and find out a little bit more about your journey and some of the things that you do yourself, is there somewhere they could get in touch with you to do that?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn, Simon Millington. So you can just search me up on that quite easy. And my Twitter is @ Delamil Tutor 1. So Delamil is DELAMILL Tutor 1. And that's on Twitter. And that's where I just share my thoughts around coaching. And, you know, I've still got a lot of development. And you will know this, Yas. you start to think you're cracking it, and then you get introduced to something new and you go, oh, wow. And you get to the realisation, I'm never going to crack this. I just need to evolve and go with it.
100%. 100%. I think that's the key thing. Understanding you're never going to crack it. And the moment you think you've cracked it, you've been left behind. Simon, look, thank you again for your time this morning. It's been really insightful. Really enjoyed that. Thank you.
Yeah, brilliant. Yes, I've enjoyed it as well. It's always great to talk coaching and learning and development. I think it's massive.
Awesome.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.